one of the unexpected and unintended, I hope, I guess, repercussions from my recent surgery is that my bowel rhythms are messed up. I can't go to sleep until 4 o'clock in the morning. So I'll make you a deal today. If you won't go to sleep during my sermon, I'll try not to go to sleep while I'm preaching my sermon this morning. Several months ago, I ran across a survey where people were asked if they could go back in time to any single event in American history. What event would they choose? Well, as you might expect, the answers were all over the board. Some suggested they'd like to go to the Wright brothers' flight at Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. Some to the time when Neil Armstrong landed on the moon. Some to the time of Paul Revere's famous ride, or the day Abraham Lincoln delivered his Gettysburg Address, or the day World War II ended. As I read that rather lengthy list, I wondered what answers might come up if we asked Christians. What day or what event in Bible history would they choose? Would you choose the day God completed his creation and pronounced that it was good? Maybe the time that Noah entered into the ark, or the day the Red Sea was parted, or the day that Jesus was crucified or resurrected, or the day of Pentecost when Peter preached the first gospel sermon. Maybe a time when Jesus performed one of his miracles. Now, any of those would be excellent choices, but I have a feeling that a lot of Christians would zero in on the events surrounding the birth of Jesus in Bethlehem. During this season of the year, we always try to spend some time looking at some of the characteristics of this season of the year. One of those characteristics that we talked about last week was it's a time of light during a period of darkness, darkest period of the year, and yet there are lights everywhere. This morning, we want to talk about the fact that it's a period of hope in a time of despair and desolation. Three of the four Gospels provide us with a flurry of details in regard to the birth of Christ. Matthew's Gospel, for example, focuses on the visit of the Magi from a country that was located to the east of Judea. You know, as we go back and as we read the account in Matthew, we can sort of visualize these ancient stargazers as they pored over those Old Testament prophecies about when and where the Messiah would be born. And then we can travel back maybe in time to the time of Daniel, whom the Bible identifies as a magi or as a wise man. And we can watch and listen as he begs God for details about the time and place of the coming of the Messiah. And then maybe we can picture the angel providing Daniel with those details. And we hear the angel tell Daniel, "But you can't write these down. You must seal these up, because this is for a time that is far into the future." And for over 500 years, people continued to pore over those prophecies. Maybe the Magi handed this down from generation to generation. And generation after generation, they scanned the skies looking for that sign. That it was a very specific sign and only a unique one-of-its-kind sign is very obvious, because when they come to Jerusalem, their statement is, "Where is he who is born King of the Jews? We have seen his star. We're come to worship him." Luke's focus is entirely different. He talks about the traditions of the events that lead up to the birth, and he talks about the time when Joseph and Mary make that trek from Bethlehem down to Jerusalem from Nazareth down to Bethlehem. And then he writes about the visit of the angel Gabriel. He talks about the birth of John the Baptist. And he talks about a number of other things until he comes to the time of Jesus' very humble and symbolic birth and the visit of the shepherds. But John's focus is even more grandiose. He takes us back to the creation. And he explains that Jesus existed long before the physical universe. And he calls him the Word, or the Logos, a word that means intelligence. He writes, "In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. What if we had the opportunity to go back in time? What if we could go back and interview Matthew or Luke or John or Mary or Joseph or the shepherds or the Magi? They would probably provide us more information than we have written down in the Gospels. And we think about that, and we think about this is the gospel story of the birth according to Matthew. This is the gospel story of the birth according to Luke. This is the gospel story of Jesus and his pre-existence according to John. But what if we could actually talk to Jesus? What if we could talk to him about his birth? You know, there actually is a gospel of Jesus' birth. We may not realize it, but it's there. It's found in Hebrews chapter 10. The author is quoting the 40th Psalm. It is impossible for the blood of bulls and goats to take away sins. Therefore, when Christ came into the world, he said, "Sacrifice and offering you did not desire, but a body you prepared for me. With burnt offerings and sin offerings you were not pleased." And then I said, "Here I am. It is written about me in the scroll. I have come to do your will, my God." And this is the Christmas story according to Jesus himself. Jesus said he came into the world for one specific purpose. And this is uniquely true of Jesus. There is no other individual in history, past or present or future, who can make that statement. Now, you know, it's true that children and grandparents and parents interact about what the future of that child may be. Parents often look to their children and they have great dreams for their children. Grandparents often throw their 10 cents into the mix and they have great dreams for their grandchildren as well. If the parents are Christians, they hope that their children will grow up to become faithful Christians too, and that they'll live in such a way that heaven can be a reality. But all of those are the parents' aspirations and the grandparents' dreams. The child isn't born with those aspirations and those dreams. Instead, the child has to be trained for his or her destiny. But Jesus was different. He tells us, "I came to do your will, O God." And that involved the reconciliation of man with his Creator. Jesus came to give us hope. That's why the angel told Joseph, "You shall call his name Emmanuel, for he will save his people from their sins." He came for a purpose, to give us hope. That's why the angels told the shepherd, "I bring you good news that will cause great joy for all the people. Today in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you. He is the Messiah, the Lord." That's why the Magi explained they had come to worship the King of the Jews, the Messiah. The Messiah brought with him the gift of hope that they had been looking for. 180 times in the Scriptures, they talk about the importance of hope. Hope appears 34 times in the Psalm, 18 in the book of Job, 10 in the book of Proverbs. The 130th Psalm, verse 7 reads, "Israel, put your hope in the Lord, for with the Lord is unfailing love, and with him is full redemption." Solomon spoke of that same hope in Proverbs 23. "There is surely a future hope for you." Isaiah did the same in Isaiah 40. "Those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint." Jeremiah adds, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." And finally, when we turn to Romans 15, "For everything that was written in the past was written to teach us, so that through the endurance taught in the Scriptures and the encouragement they provide, we might have hope." When Jesus came into the world, he came into the world to fulfill God's message, to fulfill his word, his purpose of giving us hope. Paul reminded his Gentile readers in Ephesians 2, there was a time when they faced just such a future. He said, remember that at the time you were separate from Christ, excluded from citizenship in Israel, and foreign to the covenants of the promise, you were without hope and without God in the world. Jesus came to change that. Great comedian W.C. Fields died with money in hundreds of bank accounts which were never located. Wherever W.C. Fields went to perform, he always opened a bank account. Often he would use fictitious names, and problem was he kept no records whatsoever of the deposits that he made. At one point, W.C. Fields told a friend in confidence that he had over 700 bank accounts, and he said, I know exactly where they were. Unfortunately, he died without telling anyone else. And the location of those bank accounts, for the most part, have never been known. He had one account in Berlin that he said contained $50,000 in it. But during the bombing of that city, the traces of all those bank accounts were lost. Now, why would W.C. Fields do something like that? W.C. Fields had a dream that kept repeating itself. It was a dream in which he found himself stranded in a strange city without money, without friends, and without hope. And it led him to do everything that he possibly could to see that he would have a hope. So he opened hundreds of anonymous accounts in every city in which he played. Now, Fields was not a religious man. He refused to believe in Jesus. And he truly was without hope in this world. That's one attitude towards life. Now, fortunately, it's not the Christian attitude. It wasn't Paul's attitude. He knew that we live in a difficult world. He had experienced more than his share of sorrow and suffering, but the Apostle Paul knew that somewhere, sometime, somehow, something good was out there waiting for him. And he knew that tomorrow would be a better day than today. He believed that lasting joy and peace were not only possibilities in this life, but would someday be permanent realities in the life to come. So he writes in Romans 15, may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him, so that you may overflow with hope by the power of his Holy Spirit. And this is the season of the year when Christmas brings hope. One of the things that I notice, and I'm sure you do too, as you watch the different television shows and the different presentations, is that it seems that the theme of these shows changes during this season of the year. It seems that during the regular 11 months leading up to this season, you will see TV presentation, movie after movie, you'll read books and articles, and they're all sort of pessimistic. And yet when you come to this season of the year, the entire tenor of things change. The TV shows all of a sudden begin to show a ray of hope. You begin to get a steady diet of things that are on television and in the movies and in the media that say maybe, just maybe, there's something out there. 1970s was a very turbulent time in our society. During that time, there was a Doonesbury cartoon that showed the campus radical. His name was Megaphone Mark. And Megaphone Mark was falling off to sleep. And above his head, you could see his thoughts as he drifts into sleep. It's Christmas Eve as a tired, disappointed, and disillusioned student activist drops off to sleep. The next frame shows him sleeping. The frame after that shows him stirring as if he was startled by some noise that he couldn't understand. And in the final frame, he explains, I thought I heard reindeer. Now, even in a cynical, very cynical cartoon, he couldn't escape the fact that this season of the year somehow brings hope, and it's very unusual. Love and peace and goodwill are still possibilities. And this is true because of a baby that was born in Bethlehem some 2,000 years ago, because he brought hope. hope to our world, hope that is unquenchable, and hope that is eternal. There's a beautiful and familiar story in the book of Genesis. Abraham is still called Abram at this point in time. And Abram complains to God that he has no heir to take over his house someday. And the writer of the book of Genesis, Moses, says that God brought Abram outside and he said to him, "Abram, look at the heaven, number the stars if you are able to number them." And then he said to him, "So shall your descendants be." And that's the call that God always gives to us in our times of doubt and despair. Look at the heaven, number the stars. H.G. Wells once wrote a story entitled In the Days of the Comet. And Wells' story is a somewhat typical science fiction piece in literature. He describes a mysterious green vapor that descends from the clouds and covers the earth. And the vapor has the immediate effect of putting all the earth's people into a deep sleep for 3 days. And when they finally wake up, something amazing had happened. Their inner nature had been radically transformed. And petty quarreling had come to an end, and instead of seeking fame and power and wealth, the people of the world sought to love and serve each other. And love and kindness and generosity became more important than greed or success. In short, the perfect society emerged. It was a society in which dignity of every human being was honored. What most people don't know is that Wells based his story, at least loosely, on verses in the prophet Isaiah. Isaiah looked to the day when the wolf will live with the lamb, and the leopard will lie down with the goat, and the calf and the lion and the yearling together, and a little child will lead them. And Jesus was the little child. He also took a portion of this particular story from the story of the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. You may have noticed there was a deep, depressing world, and then something strange happened. It took 3 days, but at the end of 3 days, everything changed. When Jesus died on the cross, the world in which he lived at that point was very cruel, very dark, and very depressing. But 3 days later, it was a world filled with hope. The concern of the prophets was not just one of personal salvation. They were also interested in the salvation of the world. Because after all, what good is it to save the individual and leave that individual in a world where they're going to have everybody around them who is going to be negative and crush their aspirations? But when Jesus came into the world as the Messiah, he brought the seed of a new kingdom. A kingdom that dispels darkness and ignorance and exploitation and human slavery. He brought a world in which everywhere the good news is faithfully proclaimed. And no tyrant can ever suppress it. Hitler tried, but there were still preachers who proclaimed the gospel of Jesus in the midst of Nazi Germany. Joseph Stalin tried, but there were still people who proclaimed the gospel in the midst of a horrible persecution. Nobody can explain that, but there is a deep hope that is born within the human heart, and it comes from this season of the year. No wonder the angels sang in the heavens. No wonder the wise men bowed in adoration. Philip Brooks was right when he wrote, "The hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight." Back in London during the Second World War, Hitler's warplanes were bombing that great city with regularity. And in order to safeguard the children, trainloads of them were being evacuated to the countryside. And someone asked one young lad, "Son, where are you going?" And he thought for a minute and said, "I don't know, but the king knows." And we're in the same situation. We really don't know exactly what the future holds. But our King knows, and that brings hope. Our King is King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Our King controls eternity, and that gives us hope. He's at work even in this world. He pierces the darkness of this world with his light, and that pierced darkness allows the light of hope to escape. Even the prospect of death can't dispel the believer's sense of anticipation. Damon Runyon once wrote about a man that was a Christian gentleman back during the 1800s. He was someone who was training to be a doctor, but he had a heart of deep compassion. He was a man who wanted to bring hope to people that did not have hope. This man was called by Runyon in his story, Doc Brackett. And he makes a little note here that he was changing the name from some other sources because the name was never exactly the same, and he wasn't sure what his name was. He only knew vaguely that the evidence indicated that this involved a period of time in America's history when the Appalachians was an area that was in a lot of poverty. And he decided that this doctor decided, based on his Christian beliefs, that he would go there and make a difference. So he writes that everyone in town knew Doc Brackett's office over Rice's clothing store. Says it was up a narrow flight of stairs, and there was a sign at the foot of the stairs that proclaimed his office was upstairs. He never got married because the day he was supposed to get married, he had to go on a call in the countryside to save the life of a child who was suffering from scarlet fever. And his bride-to-be was so angry that she canceled the wedding and left. But for the next 40 years or so, he never turned anyone away from his office. And the lame and the halt and the blind and the sick in that particular community went up and down those stairs to Doc Brackett's office. Eventually, during an outbreak of flu, Doc Brackett himself died. Before he passed away, he took out his notebook, and in it, before every account, he wrote the words, "Paid in full." It is said that that was one of the largest funerals in that particular part of the country. And the townspeople wanted to erect a nice tombstone, but they really didn't have the money to do that. One person came up with an idea. And so they took a wooden cross, and then they took the sign from his office upstairs, and they put it over his grave. Hope. Someone who is a follower of Jesus is able to bring hope to others. God sent Jesus into the world for a purpose. He sent him to give us hope. Jesus came, fulfilled God's will, and gave us hope. He asked his followers, "You do the same. You share the hope that you've seen in me." And so during this season of the year, you do, in fact, see that more than any other time. It's all because of the story. I came to fulfill your will, O God. This morning, if you're not a New Testament Christian, do you have hope? Do you have a hope for something in this life, a strength that would give you the opportunity to make it through difficult times and problems? You have a hope for a future? Or will you be one of those many, many people who come to the end of their lives and who will stare at the gravesite and say, "It's useless. I have no hope"? Jesus came to give that hope. His invitation is open as we stand and as we sing.